May it please the court, the district court concluded that judicial branch education records, including emails to and from judges, are subject to disclosure under the Nebraska Public Records Statute. That holding was wrong and should be reversed. And the narrowest and most straightforward grounds on which to do so are found in the face of the statutes themselves. Basically, because the legislature expressly provided for the confidentiality of JBD records, they cannot meet the statutory definition of what is a public record. And Dr. Pascerna accordingly cannot make out a prima facie case, much less carry his burden of showing a clear legal entitlement to their disclosure in this mandamus action. By deciding the case on that ground, adopting this argument, you can avoid the potential separation of powers question of the limit of the public records statute's applicability within different silos of records possessed by the judiciary. So let me walk through the components of that statutory argument. First, we know that at 84-712.01, we have the statutory definition of what is a public record. Very broad. Its default is any record possessed by a public body. But it's not unlimited. It also has a very significant exception where somewhere else in law, the legislature has provided by statute that particular records will not be rendered public. Our argument is that it has done exactly that there when it created the JBE administration records. Where at 24-205.01 sub 2 sub A, it expressly provided for JBD record confidentiality and for the authority of development and rules and standards to bring that confidentiality into effect, authority which did. Our second argument presupposes that it could, because our second argument would be that, and of course this would be beyond the statutory argument, it is our position that you have the inherent authority to control and govern the disclosure of judicial branch education records. In any event, here the statute expressly provides for the confidentiality of JBD records. The court has exercised the authority that statute purports to give you, and has adopted a policy of confidentiality. Proof of that, if you need it, is in paragraphs 8 of both the Corey Steele affidavit and the Carol McMahon Boys affidavit, neither of which were excluded by the district court. The difficulty here, admittedly, is the language of the JBE administration confidentiality provision does not mirror word for word the confidentiality exception in the public records definitional statute. And admittedly, that's a difficulty, but it's not one. Justice Kelch, my difficulty with that question would be that the hypothetical is not one that's embraced by the evidentiary record for you. The record in this case, as established by the affidavits of Mr. McMahon Boys and Mr. Steele, is to the contrary. And while I'm not going to say that there would not be a physical possibility for that exact thing to happen, the fact of the matter is the way that JBE is administered is that it is in all but limited exceptions, they try to keep the proceedings fairly secure so that the public cannot access that, cannot find out what's going on inside the JBE session for the very reason that some of the hypotheticals we laid out in our brief. Could have their adverse effects. A judge asking a particular question of a speaker, and potentially down the line, if there's an electronic portal set up for judges to review a session after the fact, that could be the court not only just disseminated to whoever might be standing at my door, but disseminated down the line if somebody would review that.
They're not asking to set in a standard, but they simply ask.
That's correct.
Didn't they also ask for video and audio recordings of the training session?
They asked for. Their request was their request.
And that is really a request to virtually attend the training session, isn't it?
It certainly would be. If my hypothetical of it happens, which is that there would be an electronic board with the JPD administration, which I think is a realistic possibility. On this particular, no. But we are, what we're trying to do is defend the policy choice the court has made on confidentiality for in a rule that can endure, so that these are not necessarily decisions that are being made on a record by record basis.
I'd like to ask you about the words that you just used, policy choice that the court has made. You can see there's no formal rule that the Supreme Court has adopted on this particular topic of confidentiality.
Yes, no written. Yes.
So the adoption of a policy by the court, as I understand your argument, leads from the constitutional delegation of the Chief Justice as the executive head of the courts to the court administrator as his designee, and in effect to the JPD deputy administrator as
I would reiterate, and I think this is a very important point that I want to make before I reserve time. You don't need to reach that because you can decide. You don't need to reach the constitutional question because you can assume without deciding that the public record statute applies to at least JPD administration records. And decide the case on strictly statutory grounds.
My question about that, understand that 84-7.12, that starts with except as, that's where you get to 24-205.01, which says JPD's advisory committee may do thus and such, but how do you get from that point to the policy?
Oh, the evidence of the court has made the policy decisions? Well, first, it denied. Mr. Steele denied the review. Second, both Mr. Steele and Ms. McAnvoy testified that it's a policy. It is a policy both of the committee and of the court, JPD confidential. The point I wanted to make on the statutory language is if you do decide to reverse the case on the statutory basis, and I think that would be the proper course. You need not struggle with the fact that the JVE record confidentiality provision in Chapter 24 doesn't mirror the language of the statutory definition in 84.7.12.01. I would direct the court's attention to Orr versus Knowles from 1983, Report 8215, Neb 49. Discussed extensively in the 2004 Attorney General opinion that's been discussed throughout this briefing. You went through exactly the analysis that I'm urging you to do here, and you were trying to look at either at a statute that was admittedly not clear. In fact, you had said it's not exactly clear what is meant by confidentiality on the statute, but you looked to its context to determine whether you could infer the legislator's intent that the records in question would be confidential. And there, at page 55 of the opinion, you actually stated while the legislature might have been more explicit or clear when stating the meaning of confidentiality under this statute, we feel it is reasonable to infer from a reading of these other statutes that the legislature intended to keep proceedings under this section private and not a matter of public record. So I think that gives you a roadmap of exactly the type of statutory construction you're being asked to do here, and forecloses any notion that the JBE confidentiality provision would not apply. Briefly, before I sit down, a intervening decision of this court, since briefing concluded, forecloses Dr. Viskerma's waiver argument, Steckelberg versus Nebraska State Patrol, which the court decided earlier this year. You said that a public body is not stopped from asserting a new basis of denial from a denial letter to mandamus litigation, except to prevent manifest injustice or prejudice. Here, just as in Steckelberg, there's no evidence of that, nor is Dr. Viskerma put any addition.
So instead of providing the staff for us to provide we would have to refer the legislature's intent to make these confidential based upon these board committee.
Well, you already have an express provision in the chapter 24. But even if you needed, even if you felt you needed to go beyond that, or versus null versus doing, looking for exactly such an exception, you can look to the context of the statute in determining whether whether that confidentiality has been brought into effect. And here, it's almost undisputed, given that the court, through its JVE apparatus, has absolutely adopted the policy of confidentiality. So, for that reason, that JVE records are not subject to public disclosure. Well, you have it in a written rule, and that, in the context and the confines of the record in this case, it's not implied because your apparatus is testified to, as Mr. Steele, and Boys, that if that's the policy that the court has adopted. So the difficulty here is, of course, there is, as Justice Castle pointed out, there's not a written rule. And that's why the first sentence of our argument section in our brief indicates that if the rule were written, and the policy that already exists de facto made de jure a writing in the court's rules, this case would be moot. I don't think you need to. Because the primary question for the court is whether public records statutes compel disclosure. And under our statutory argument, again, governed by the roadmap and board versus Knowles, yes, it is, but it has a very significant exception where the legislature has somewhere else in law said that a particular silo of records would be confidential. In 24-20, the definition statute, 84-712.01, does not search for the committee's action. It simply searches for express statutory language providing for confidentiality. Yes. That exception. Well,
aside from the denial,
That's correct. I readily concede that there's not a written rule articulating their policy. My argument is similar, but if you're looking at the statutory analysis, you don't need to search for that because the exception at 84-712.01 only searches for express statutory language, which the legislature provided in the JBE confidentiality. For those reasons, we think that this is a result that is clearly anticipated by the legislature when it enacted the JVE confidentiality provision, knowing that it already had the exception in the public record definition. And for those reasons, we would ask that you reverse the district court.
May it please support. My name is Steve Cross, and I'm calling on behalf of the athlete, Dr. Les Vespers. Also with me in the courtroom today is Mr. Cameron Hassan. Your Honors, several law review articles have been written about all the issues and pressures in this case. But this appeal can be fully addressed by answering two basic questions. The first one is whether the records in this case fall within the statutory definition of public records. And the second question is whether the appellant has waived their constitutional arguments or failing to comply with this court's Rule 19. Two recent cases decided by this court, one of which was already mentioned by counsel for the appellant, address and effectively disclose both of those issues. In Steckelberg versus Nebraska, Steve Troll, his court addressed to the typical test for whether the record needs to be for public record. And this was simply the latest in a line of cases by this court where you discuss what that test is. In Steckelberg, this court held that the appellant, quote, has shown that the record sought through those belonging to an agency of the state and were thus public records as defined in 84.712.701, unquote. Your Honor, the application of that test in this present case is no more complicated than that. The appellant's primary argument in this case.
But the opposing counsel says, even if he started at 84.712.701,
that's precisely his issue. 84.712.01 has an extremely broad definition of what is a public record, basically anything belonging to a public agency, unless. No, Your Honor. We were basically simply saying by the prosecutor that legal conclusions and opinions which for which no foundation is held are not admissible. Error. Error.
Yes. Regarding how large the material, would you still be here if you were in the topics of rules and regulations, including the JVD records of the records?
It's possible, Your Honor. However, it's also possible that Dr. Vestgren would not have invested many thousands of dollars in pursuing what the law is at the current time. That is precisely the crux of this case. No, in addition, no, it made known about the decision. This answers what both answer questions, Your Honor. The statute has an extremely broad definition of what is a public record, and it says, except if there's another statute that expressly says that a particular record shall not be disclosed. Now, the appellate is arguing that 24.205.01 is such a statute. But it simply isn't. All that statute does is it allows an advisory committee to make a recommendation to this court to have a ruling. So they admit that hasn't happened for us.
Come under the exception of the public records act that's providing 24.205.01. We would have had to adopt those rules and regulations that dealt with judicial regulations.
Yes, Your Honor. Otherwise, you're basically getting in a situation where it would be argued that the court would not be following the rule of the law. The court can't simply apply it.
Simply because our court administrator and our commission of education have stated in their actual instance of policy that that's not sufficient to comply with the requirements.
Absolutely, Your Honor. The appellate is effectively asking this court to substitute these two affidavits for the Supreme Court and the legislature of the state of Nebraska. They don't make the law.
I want to make sure I followed the prior answer to Justice Wright's question. If there had been a written policy that required public records, are you saying that this would fall under
At that point, and in that hypothetical situation, we then probably have an as-applied challenge potentially to the rule, but that's not the case that's now before the court. Certainly, as we discussed in our brief, the recommendation from the advisory committee to the court and rules subsequently adopted by the court would still have to comply with constitutional limitations. And if it was felt that those rules exceeded those constitutional limitations, someone could, in that situation, claim constitutional. But that's not what is before the court in this case. Yes. And I think further highlighting the fact that there are no such rules is that if this is not yes, Your Honor. However, it's the defendant in this case is not the judge, court employee. I think it's a state constitution. The only time it would not be, it is possible that perhaps a parent could bring a due process challenge if they felt that they were being denied access to information which was being used by a judge in deciding parenting time or custody of their child, because you have a fundamental constitutional right that would be affected by that. And if you have what would amount to secret policies and secret procedures being taught to judges and then applied to a case doing the due process.
So when does, you can see, I'm conceding that the pre-decisional privilege would protect certain things.
Absolutely, Your Honor. I believe that deliberative process privilege is absolutely essential to protecting the separation of powers. It's never been recognized in Nebraska, but in an appropriate case in the future, this court certainly could. No, Your Honor. I think that would be clearly covered by the deliberative process privilege.
What I want to explore is when does a case have to be already in place, ending case, or can a judge who, particularly a trial judge, as informed as it was, who anticipates I'm going to have lots of dissolution cases, and I would like to know more about the science of child development. If I go out and I begin to educate myself in anticipation of using that information for decisional purposes, is that discoverable under your view?
At this point, Your Honor, I could only analogize to federal law, and in the District of Nebraska, that would not be affected by the deliberative process privilege because it is not truly related to the adjudicative process in a particular case.
So we have to wait until the case is pending before we can educate ourselves.
Well, I think there's really two different things there. I think the public, certainly parents in this case, would have the right to know who is providing continuing judicial education and the basics of what they're teaching. Otherwise, you have a due process problem. But it's certainly not something that would be protected under any case law that I'm familiar with in terms of what would be protected by deliberative process.
So let's say, statutes and parks, and some prisoner, possibly a sitting judge, possibly some other educator type, right, comes in, JDE meeting, and says, here's the new law, and here's what to look out for, and here's what's going to be abrogated, and here's what you need, and how would you characterize that in there?
I would characterize that as being no different than a CLE that I might attend at the State Bar Convention, because it's not about any particular case. There's no adjudicator. Under the federal case law, there's thank you.
Before you sit down, you can see that the training sessions, the judicial training sessions, are not open to the public.
Yes, Your Honor. I think that really implicates the intersection between the Public Records Act and the Open Meetings Act. I do not believe that would be an open meeting.
If the meeting itself is not open to the public,
Does that inform our decision in any respect regarding whether the documents read or discussed during that meeting?
I don't believe it does, Your Honor. I also represent all intergovernmental entities, and so we always apply both the Open Meetings Act and the Public Records Act. If, for example, a group of directors were having a meeting and there was less than a quorum, that's not a public meeting. The public is not entitled to attend. However, if some training materials were provided to the to that board of directors, the public would be entitled to see what was in the training material.
What if the training session was videotaped or audio taped and archived for judges to review those who couldn't attend the training session? Is the scope of your public records request broad enough to include that kind of behavior?
It is, Your Honor. However, the existing Public Records Act provides for the redaction of information that falls within any of the 21 categories of documents that may be withheld from the public. You would also have the judicial deliberative process privilege that you could assert as to perhaps some dialogue between the judge and a presenter. Yes, Your Honor. In other jurisdictions, they have categorized judicial branch records as being within chambers records, which are not disclosed, case records, which are disclosed everywhere, and administrative records. The communication that you described would clearly be an administrative record, and under existing Nebraska law, clearly a public. I'm not talking about communication between judges.
Between our administrator and presenter.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
He is over.
Thank you for your argument. Thank you.